This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a five-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-Hour Energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
Take me out to the ball game.
What are you doing?
Did you know DirecTV has the most MLB games?
So you're singing.
Yeah, they put your favorite teams front and center right when you turn it on. Buy me some cold cuts and flapjacks.
Those aren't even the words.
I'm allergic to peanuts.
Stream DirecTV, home of the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks. RSNs available with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package.
As promised, caller number 10. At 800-636-1067, you're going to win a four-pack of tickets right now. The BC Defenders home opener, it's this Sunday, March 30th. They're at Audi Field. Be there for the Red Zone home opener celebration as the Defenders battle reigning UFL champions, the Birmingham Stallions. Welcome back to Grant and Danny on the Fan. Charlie Slows and Dave Jagler will be with us for the final 90 minutes of the show today to discuss all things 2025 Nationals baseball. Opening day is just one day away. And we're on site, so you can come out and enjoy the broadcast live in person and get to meet the fellas. Lost Rhino Brew Pub is where we are celebrating baseball today. They're actually releasing a brand new IPA, the Hitton Dingers Hazy IPA. So if you want to come taste that, and that'll put you in the baseball mood as much as the conversation will, Lost Rhino Brew Pub is where you've got to be in Ashburn. Right now, though, I want to get the Beltway Blitz started. We'll cover the Caps as Ovi got another goal closer to Wayne Gretzky last night, and the Terps who play in the Sweet 16 tomorrow. But let's start on the gridiron. So big news on the D.C. Defenders front as they're on the verge of opening their season at Audi Field. Their longtime head coach, Reggie Barlow, friend of the program, has taken a college job. And so the interim head coach, Shannon Harris, who's taken over the team, joins us now as he's getting his team ready for their first game at home this Sunday. Coach, thanks for a few minutes. How are you?
I'm wonderful, man. How are things going your way?
Doing very well. So take us through just how wild this last couple of weeks has been when you found out that Coach might be on the move and that you would be running the show this year.
Right, yeah. So, you know, it was one of those things that, you know, took us all by surprise. And, you know, when the announcement was made, for Coach Barlow to be leaving, and then I kind of fell into that role. And, you know, the thing about it, the beauty of it, that I've, you know, been here with Coach Barlow for the past, you know, going on a third season here. So that's the beauty of it. And, you know, having the opportunity to have gone through camp this year right before his departure. So it was a pretty smooth and easy transition to hop into that role. And, you know, everyone, a part of the organization, have embraced it. And so we're moving accordingly.
I'm sure you don't want to make it about yourself, but I do want to ask just about the opportunity for you. You know, this is the preeminent spring football league here, the UFL. Some of the other coaches have won national championships and been head coaches in the National Football League. Just what kind of opportunity is this for you and in your career?
Yeah, you know, you're right. I mean, it is a really great opportunity for myself. And, you know, the great part about it is, you know, having good people, great people around you along this journey. And so, you know, I never like to make it just about myself, but, you know, at the same time, it's about all of us. This is a great opportunity for us all to display all of our talent as coaches, to, you know, showcase that what type of coaches that we are, and that, you know, what type of leadership we all have a part of this. And, you know, the other part about it, we have some really good players. So, but, you know, it goes back to your question about, for me, it's beyond a great opportunity. And, you know, I'm very grateful for Coach Barlow to allow me to be in this role, because, you know, he spoke up for me to be able to be put into this role, because he felt like, you know, I was the best one for it. And, you know, leadership that maybe took it and, you know, had an opportunity to meet with them about it. And so even for them, you know, our leaders and Russ Brandon and Darryl Johnston, they trusted in me with this organization. So I'm very grateful for that.
DC Defenders start their season at Audi Field on Sunday afternoon against the defending champions in the UFL. It's a great atmosphere. I love going out there. It's a ton of fun. The interim head coach, Shannon Harris, is with us. So tell people who have not been out to a game what they can expect, and also give us an idea just of the roster you guys have put together. First chance we'll see them this year.
Yeah, I tell you, you know, this year you'll see a very exciting football team that, you know, similar to what we had year one in 2022 under the Coach Barlow leadership first year. And so we have that same quality of talent. And so you'll see a team that's going to play fast on offense. And, you know, defensively, we're going to be very aggressive, you know, with, you know, our style of play on defense. And our GM, Vaughn, has done a really good job of putting together a team with so much talent across the board. So every position on our roster has some really good talent. And, you know, we feel really good about the guys that we got coming in for this season. To get us started off against a really good football team and the defending champions of Birmingham.
Shannon Harris, DC Defenders head coach. They play game number one on Sunday. We'll see you at Audi Field. Good luck.
Thank you. I really appreciate it, and can't wait to get back to the district, man, and no shields up.
Let's do it. Absolutely. Thank you, Coach Shannon Harris of the Defenders, to kick off our blitz. Let's talk hockey. Mike Vogel, WashCaps.com, on the heels of the biggest regular season matchup the Caps are going to play this season. Number one in the East against number one in the West yesterday against Winnipeg. Vogues, what'd you think? I mean, that's about as good a hockey game as I've seen. Unfortunately, a loss in overtime, but it felt like the playoffs.
Yeah, it sure did, Grant. Really, right from the puck drop, I thought, and especially if you go back to last year, when they went into that building last year, similar time, it was mid-March, beginning of a five-game road trip, and they got smacked. The scoreboard only said 3-0, but it looked a lot worse than that. They just never had the puck. They were swarmed under by the forecheck, and then they went to Edmonton and got smoked 7-2 a couple nights later, and it looked like they were done. They finished up that trip with three straight wins and put themselves kind of back in the playoff picture, but the way they played against that team last night honestly looked so much sharper and better. That's a hard team to play against. They saw that. They know that. They came back in Washington on February 1st. It was a tough one for the Caps because they were coming. That was their first game back from their longest trip of the year, five-game trip. So I loved the way they played last night. I thought it might have been their best second period of the year in terms of giving up essentially nothing. What was frustrating to me was probably the two power plays in the second period, because, you know, when Mangiapane scores that goal in the last couple of seconds of the first period, ties the game, now the next goal matters significantly in a game of that magnitude against a team that good and you're playing in their building. And they had those two power plays, chance to jump ahead, get the lead. Winnipeg is the best team in the league at defending at 5-on-5. So you kind of go into that game knowing that you're going to need to muster a special team's goal to beat them, especially in their building. That was their chance to do it, and they couldn't. I give them big kudos for being able to come back and scratch out that last goal. So much the better that Alex Ovechkin scored it. He's a goal closer to Wayne Gretzky. But I love the way that goal happened because Trevor Van Riemsdyk made an amazing play to get that thing started, keep the puck in the zone. And then he gets an assist without even using his stick because he lost his stick. And in the process, he becomes the sixth cap defenseman to score 20 points this year. And that's the first time that's ever happened in franchise history. So pretty cool scenario all around. The only way it would have been better, granted, is if hit the pipe in overtime and that puck goes in. But honestly, I think I think most guys walked out of that building last night feeling pretty good about the way they played, and they should.
Yeah, you'll take that. I mean, that's the number two team in the NHL right there with you in Winnipeg in terms of points and wins. And you go to their building, and you match them stride for stride. I think it was about as good as you could play it. Go to Ovi for a second. He's now 5 back of Gretzky, 6 back of the record. Last night was symbolic to me as he scored with 4 minutes to go and tied the game. So many of us feared, Vogst, that this chase would happen basically in a season where nothing was important. And here it is that all these goals are huge. And in unison with the team, they're lifting him, he's lifting them. This is working out about as well as anyone could have hoped as a fan of this team.
Yeah, absolutely. Like you said, it's a rising tide, and it's lifting all the boats. And you're seeing it even in the stat I just mentioned about the first time six defensemen. It's because the forwards are doing so well. And the other side of the equation is that goal last night, Ovi gets the 60 points. That's no big deal for him. He's done it, many times in his career, probably pretty much every year. But that's four of the Caps' top six have now reached 60. Tom Wilson's a point away. Connor McMichael's 5 points away. Possible they both get there. If so, it's the first time in over 30 years that they've been able to do that. So, again, you're seeing a collection of guys up in the lineup, forwards and defensemen, having career years. And you can extend it to the goaltending, too. I just think it's been a really magical season. And to your point, it didn't look like Alex Ovechkin was ever going to play this kind of meaningful hockey late in a season, potentially in the rest of his career, given the way the season ended 2 years ago and what the Caps had in the cupboard at that time. The fact that they've been able to draft the way they have, engineer a couple of Calder Cup champions, and completely retool their varsity roster in 2 years' time is staggering. And then signing Jacob Chychrun to an 8-year contract extension yesterday morning sets them up for another season like that next year, because they get the same 6 defensemen back, and they've already got the same 2 goaltenders coming back.
Vogts, what a fun year it's been, I'm sure, for you on the beat. It's just getting going with the playoffs around the corner. Thank you for the time today on the Blitz.
Always fun talking to you, Grant. Take care.
Next time we're chatting with Mike Vogel, Alex Ovechkin's going to be either on the doorstep or just having passed very likely in his chase of the great one. All right, let's talk college hoops. Maryland basketball's in the Sweet 16. And here to talk about it is our buddy, Kevin Sheehan. You know him from his work on the Kevin Sheehan Show. So, Kev, I got to tell you, I think they beat Florida. I think they hang and give them a run for their money. I kind of think the Gators are a little overrated. How much of a chance do you give them?
I give them a really good chance, Grant. I mean, those that have followed the team and watched them this year, their best is good enough to beat anybody in this draw, maybe with the exception of Duke. But, Duke's not proven because of the conference they were in. But if they play their best, if they play like they did, if you put Illinois jerseys on Florida tomorrow night, Maryland would win by 20. For whatever reason, they played Illinois very well. But, yeah, I give them a really good chance if they play their best.
I just think Florida, and look, I'm not Andy Katz, right? I didn't watch them all season long. But what I was told by the experts going into the couple of games in the tournament I've now watched is that they give up a lot of easy buckets in the post, that they're not particularly good at defending around the rim. Maryland's got the two bigs, and I know Florida can score with anybody, but the Terps are so good at defending the three-point line. I kind of like going big. I mean, at one point, they just dwarfed Colorado State, and seeing where that gets you in the low post.
Yeah, I think the problem is that's true, and yet Maryland's been out-rebounded badly in three straight games, including
Colorado
by Colorado
State. Had like 14 offensive rebounds or something crazy with that small lineup.
Yeah. And that's like they've become and has developed for me into the biggest concern. They got out-rebounded by Michigan in the Big Ten semis, 47-18. That's not a misprint. They got out-rebounded. They gave up 13 offensive rebounds to Grand Canyon. They gave up. They got out-rebounded 39-29, gave up another 13 or 14 offensive boards to a smaller Colorado State team. There are reasons for it. They just have to correct it because against Florida, if you give them 13, 14, 15 second chances, I don't think you can win the game.
Kevin Sheehan on the Grant and Danny Beltway Blitz. I had Kevin Willard on the show yesterday, and some of his answers and some of that audio went all over the country. He made it sound to you like he plans on returning to Maryland. Do you disagree with me that I'm still thinking he leaves? I mean, really, I need some type of indication that he's staying in the next like 72 hours if they win, or else I just assume the longer this goes on that he's already got something in the works.
Grant, I swear to God, I mean, over the last 24 hours, I mean, it's dozens and dozens of people, you know, in the know, sort of on the periphery of the know, and everybody's got a different opinion. If you asked me over the weekend, I would have said he's staying. If you would have asked me at some point on Monday or Tuesday, I would have said he's going. Some point yesterday staying, some point today going. I have no idea. What I do know now is that the school, according to the people that I've talked to, they've stepped up and they've given him basically everything that he's asked for. So the ball's kind of in his court now. You know, the issue is Villanova has tons of money. They are, you know, they don't have football. There's no competing interests. It's the Big East, which is really, you know, his growing up, you know, and living in for much of his life conference. I don't know what's going to happen, but I hope he stays, and it would be destructive to the Maryland basketball program in the short term, to say the least, if he leaves.
So, I don't know if today's the day to ask you this because it's exciting. It's fun. They're playing in the Sweet 16 tomorrow. It should be celebratory. But I mean, you're on now, and this is the story. It feels like it would be devastating because who do you hire? I guess you could go local with, like, my guy Tony Skin from Mason or something. But it feels like the hiring cycle's pretty much drying up. You know how this goes with the recruiting game and the transfers. I feel like it would set them back years if he walked.
I feel the same way. I mean, I'm trying not to be hyperbolic about it, but, you know, in the short term, you lose Gillespie and Rice for sure. Everybody you're, you know, on in the portal goes elsewhere. The coach, you don't have an AD right now. That's part of the problem in terms of where this thing is currently. So who hires the coach? I think they should bring Gary Williams back and make him at least the interim AD until all this stuff, you know, gets fixed and settled. But yeah, I mean, you know, Tony Skin and Dwayne Simpkins, I love both of those guys and they're doing great jobs, but you typically don't go from AU or Mason to Maryland, you know, and yet who else is out there? It would not be a great situation if he leaves, not at all. And you're right. It's tough to talk about this because they're in the Sweet 16 for the first time in 9 years. And I think a lot of us feel like, and it sounds like you do too, they actually have a chance, even though they're playing a one seed, and yet we're dealing with this. So Yeah, and I think, you know, even beyond that, Grant, the reveal, which, you know, a lot of us have known for a while, but almost the public reveal that administratively it's been a bit of an S show for a while now, you know, makes the job less appealing than it's ever been. If they have to go back out and search for somebody. So,
yeah,
it would not be good.
All right, well, let's circle back to the positivity of the game tomorrow then and the Sweet 16 matchup. A win over Florida looks like what? And then what would that mean for the program?
What does it look like? That's a good question. I've started to think about that for tomorrow's show. It looks like not getting out-rebounded by double digits or more, with a significant double-digit, you know, offensive rebound number. It looks like a low turnover game, a really solid shooting game from behind the arc in particular. They were 10 of 24 against Colorado State. They're a good three-point shooting team. They've got multiple options. I specific to a player, one of the things that's been great about this team is that on any given night, regardless of the opponent, it can be any one of their starting five that goes for 20-plus, or two of the starting five that goes for 20-plus. So I'm not going to predict which, you know, two or three go for 18, 20, but you're going to need a couple of them, and they're capable of that. But defensively, they've got to get stops and then limit Florida to one shot per possession. And then, you know, Naki and I were talking about pace today. Maryland loves pace. I'm not worried about, you know, if foul trouble is an issue, that's a problem because they don't have the bench. But assuming no foul trouble, I don't mind an up-tempo pace. I think Maryland can absolutely, you know, keep pace with Florida.
All right, Kevin, big one tomorrow night. I am pulling for the Terps, not only because it's good for the locals, but I know so many of you guys ride or die with the club and have for a long time and have been waiting for this, so enjoy it.
Yeah, it's a big one. Thanks, Grant.
You got it. That's your Beltway Blitz on the teams in town you care the most about. Someone explain to me, NFL edition next, and we are closing in on 5 o'clock, which means our Nats season preview. Charlie Slows, Dave Jagler on site. They are here right now at the Lost Rhino Brew Pub doing their stretches like relievers getting ready to come into the game to preview the 2025 season. So come hang out with us. It's a packed house today at the Lost Rhino in Ashburn. This is The Fan.
Hey, it's Gemma Spegg, host of the Open Mind original podcast, Mantra. Every Monday, I'll bring you a new mantra, a simple yet powerful phrase to help you clear your mind and stay grounded amidst the chaos. I'll also share some personal stories, journal prompts, and a weekly challenge to bring each mantra to life. Follow and listen to Mantra, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Open Mind Studios, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
I see Charlie Slows and Dave Jagler at the Lost Rhino Brew Pub, which means it's almost time to preview the Nationals 2025 season. They'll be sitting down with us in a half hour, and they'll be with me for the duration of the program, 5 to 6:30. A lot of Nats gear out here, some Caps gear as well. People are ready for baseball in the nation's capital. We get the home opener on opening day this time around against the Phillies tomorrow. Looking forward to discussing the outlook of the ball club with Charlie and Dave of Nationals Radio right here on The Fan from Lost Rhino Brew Pub, where the Hittin' Dingers IPA is a smash hit. This has been a home run today at the facility. People are really enjoying the brand new beer. And I just heard they're going to be canning it. It'll be available coming up in the start of April. So you come out here, you get it by the glass. But it will be canned and available in short order. So perfect timing with the start of the Major League Baseball season. A couple of someone explained to me's out of the NFL before we get to the Nats here at the top of the 5 o'clock hour. First of all, news out of Cincinnati. Toby and I were arguing yesterday about Trey Hendrickson a bunch, whether or not Washington should consider trading the number 29 pick for the defensive end, add him as a defensive player of the year candidate. I didn't realize that the Bengals over the last couple of days have started talking to Hendrickson again, reportedly, and are going to try to pay him. I'm not really sure financially what their plan is or how this is going to work, but they seem to be trying to put together the most extreme stars and scrubs operation that we've seen in the NFL. Previously, the team that we've seen do it the most successfully is the LA Rams, where they paid a bevy of stars a lot of money to the point where now you don't have a middle class in your personnel, essentially, and it's just back of the roster, cheaper types as depth. But your starters are mostly really good, and you've got a lot of superstars that you pay a lot. And they call it stars and scrubs. They didn't, but you know the media did. The Bengals paid Joe Burrow all the money at quarterback. They paid T. Higgins at wide receiver on the same day that they paid Ja'Marr Chase. And so by keeping those three superstars on offense, everybody kind of assumed that it meant that Trey Hendrickson was certainly going to leave, because you can't prioritize offense to that extent, pay those guys the huge money, and then give him $35 million a year. You're talking about two elite-level quarterback contracts almost for non-quarterbacks in Chase and Hendrickson, and then another really, really high-end non-quarterback contract, a little lower down the board in Higgins, all around the sun in the solar system, which is Burrow is one of the highest-paid QBs in the league. I wouldn't even put him in the elite quarterback paid tier. He's the tier above that of, like, the special few guys that make the most money. But that's apparently what they're going to try to do. And if they can, kudos to Duke Tobin, their GM, and their ownership group for pulling it off, because when you have a Chase, when you have a Higgins, when you get Burrow, and you hit the lottery on Hendrickson where they drafted him, then the operation should do everything they can to keep them around. And the goal should be that those guys stay there. It just hasn't really been considered because it doesn't seem possible. And I don't talk about this from the perspective of the Bengals because you guys don't necessarily care about them. I talk about this because I really did believe, as recently as yesterday, that they would still be looking to trade their star defensive end. And there's no team that would be a better fit than Washington because, A, they have a 29th overall pick and a second-round pick late in round two that presumably, based on their mindset and paradigm so far this offseason, they'd be willing to give up. Number one reason why they'd be a fit. Number two, they have a massive need at defensive end. It is the biggest need right now for this football team is an edge that can get to the quarterback. You know that Dorrance Armstrong, who they paid last year, is going to start on the outside up front. The other defensive end at this moment is not on the roster as far as I'm concerned. Cleveland Farrell can help you play the run a little bit. He got hurt a few times, and it's just kind of a depth piece, in my opinion. They brought him back as a free agent who re-signed on the cheap for the second time in 2 years on a one-year deal. But otherwise, what else you got right now on the edge? Jacob Martin they brought in, who's kind of a journeyman. Dietrich Wise, who they signed from the New England Patriots, I think will be helpful as, again, a potential starter in a pinch. Maybe he's the first guy on the field right now with Armstrong over Cleveland Farrell. But we talked to people in New England after that addition. Tremendous human being, awesome in the locker room, really good leader of men type, okay football player at this point, who you want to be coming off the bench, not starting, if you're trying to win something meaningful or be really impactful and good defensively. So for me, you either have to still add a veteran edge via the trade market or draft one probably in the first round at 29. The problem with the second option is that the 29th pick likely needs to be traded so you can recoup more assets because you only have five picks right now. So if I'm moving back, now I'm getting an edge where? In the second round? Mid or late second round? With the pick that I add in a trade or the one that I currently have at the end of round two? I'm getting, what, the eighth or ninth edge that comes off the board at that point? And that guy's supposed to help me a lot in year one? I don't see it. And that's why I've been a proponent of just going further into a bleep them picks philosophy and given up an early pick for Hendrickson. But it doesn't sound like it's on the table anymore anyway. The Bengals may have said, you know what, don't worry about if you would be willing to do it because we're not selling the thing any longer. You're making up your mind if you want to offer the money for the used car or whatever, and you go over to the lot and you want to look at it. You haven't really made up your mind, and they go, yeah, never mind, we're not selling it. Don't worry about it. Hendrickson's staying possibly. So the defensive end spot for Washington is probably going to have to be solved in the draft. Unless they have a change of heart and can't get something done with Hendrickson. But his money now is up to close to what? $35, $36 million a year with the market booming this offseason? And I try not to get too caught up in or care too much about how much guys need to be paid. Because number one, you know, you're only paying them for a couple of years on the front end of the deal and then there's some dead money eventually. But also the cap just keeps going up and up and up massively to the point where there's not really debilitating contracts outside of the quarterback position if you're paying a guy to be better than he's playing. And that's the only way you really get yourself in a lot of trouble, short of just signing a lot of bad contracts. But it was Jordan Schultz with the report yesterday. You know, he was the guy that was fighting with Ian Rappaport in the Starbucks during the combine. Fox NFL Insider saying that a trade appears dead and that Cincinnati and Hendrickson, while they've been at a stalemate, are going to go back to the drawing board. The Bengals would love to compete this season and want to sign all the guys that were thinking about walking out the door, is what Schultz said. Be pretty amazing. Grant and Danny on the Fan. We're going to preview the Nats season coming up at 5 for the final 90 minutes of the show. Not a bad day in D.C. sports. Ovi is just 5 from Gretzky. And we are one day from opening day. You're listening to The Fan. Great. The start of the Nats baseball season with a beer release party at Lost Rhino Brew Pub today in Ashburn. That's where we are live broadcasting from Lost Rhino Brew Pub. We'll be here until 6:30. You can enjoy ballpark menu specials. They are providing an opportunity for you to win Nats tickets as well. We're raffling off some Nats tickets out here. You can meet our special guests earlier today. Tress Way came by, which was great. Charlie Slows and Dave Jagler are joining me in 15 minutes for the rest of the show to preview the MLB and Nats seasons. We're going to be here until 6:30. Lost Rhino Brewery in Ashburn. So if you're in the area, throw your Nats gear on and get on out here one day ahead of opening day. I wanted to play some audio I saw yesterday from Deebo Samuel, new Commanders wide receiver, on coming to Washington. This was an interview he did with the Commanders social team, and Brian Colbert does some of their content over with the team. But listen to what he said about wanting to be in Washington.
After they granted, you know, me permission to go out there and seek a trade, I got on the phone with my agent. My agent texted me. He was like, yo, who's your top three? And so people might think this is fraud, but, like, this was my number one.
Word. Okay.
So this was my number one because, you know, I've been watching JD a lot because of Brandon Ayuk.
Yeah.
That's Ayuk's right-hand man.
So two things. One, you could come at me and say, well, of course he's going to say Washington was his number one choice. Every player always says that after they sign somewhere. Although I did see, and I don't know who it was, but some back-of-the-roster guy with the Dolphins was doing an interview after he signed. And somebody said to him, why did you sign in Miami? And he said, beggars can't be choosers. And I thought it was the funniest answer ever. Because what honesty. He basically is acknowledging that nobody else wanted him. Happens sometimes, man. I've been there. We've all been there. Late enough. You know, somebody gets turned down a few times. They look at you. You look a little better, Tim. You know what I'm saying? But anyway, I think Deebo Samuel was telling the truth. I think there was honesty in that answer that he wanted to come to Washington. And this is the proof now, finally, of what we have speculated was going to happen for a couple of years. If the Commanders could ever find the young star quarterback, check. If that quarterback could get into the cool kids club and wear the members-only jacket where everybody likes them and thinks they're the next great player, check. Then you could become a destination operation. You could become a team, once and for all, where people want to come play in your building. People want to be a part of your organization. And that is absolutely happening in front of our eyes. It has taken decades. There were almost 30 years when that was not the case. The only way Washington could get a great football player was to overpay them. And you saw it throughout the Snyder era. The Patriots are doing it as we speak. They are paying what I call the loser tax. They are paying the bad team tax. They just gave Stephon Diggs way more money than Stephon Diggs deserves. And I apologize to all of the Maryland fans who love Stephon Diggs. He a Terp. But he's not going to end up making all $69 million that they gave him over the 3 years. That's funny money. But an APY of $23 million is a joke. Comp that to the other wide receiver contracts that have come out this offseason. That's $6 million more than Debo, which, okay, you know, whatever. But that's more money than Davante Adams got. That's more money than Chris Godwin got. It's a stupid contract. I'm sorry. For a guy that ends up hating every quarterback he plays for and ends up at odds yelling at Josh Allen or whoever else as he's an MVP candidate, you're bringing him in to work with your young ascending quarterback who needs a weapon and he's going to be his best buddy playing in the sandbox? I thought that was a bad idea. But I guess they didn't have many options and he's probably the most talented wide receiver left. But they've mishandled it. This is one of the issues when you have so much money but you aren't a destination building right now. The Commanders are. And so Debo Samuel's telling you, I wanted to be there. That was my number one choice. I believe him because, number one, I do think Jaden's a guy that people want to play with. And Debo, telling you, his best friend is Brandon Ayuk. Lest we forget last offseason when they were hanging out constantly. And, in fact, even into the preseason when Brandon Ayuk was trying to get traded to Washington and he posted practice video from the Commanders that Jaden had obviously sent him, which is not a great look. But they're very, very close. So I believe Debo Samuel when he says, I've been watching this dude. I know about this guy. I'm following him because his best friend was one of my boys in my wide receiver room. He also knows Adam Peters and has for a long, long time. So it stands to reason and makes perfect sense that Debo Samuel, assuming he and Adam Peters had a good relationship, which we now know they did, if they reunited, that he would want to go to Washington and be back with AP. And I just have a hard time believing, based on what I know of Peters right now, that any player would not have a good relationship with him. He treats players like royalty. He treats them with reverence and the respect that guys clamor for and crave when they're pros in the league. And it just hasn't happened here for a long time. It's why they were 32nd on all the NFLPA polling the last couple of years when you ranked all the teams on who the best team to work for is. 32nd. Now, this year, after one season with new owners and Adam Peters coming in to change how they treat the players and the culture, they're 11th in those same NFLPA voting polls that they do. They're from gone from 32 to 11. So if that's the guy running it, Peters, and you worked with him in San Francisco, plus you know and like the quarterback and you've gotten to meet him and follow him through Brandon Ayuk, we're seeing it. It is happening. This was not just speculation. This wasn't just us being hyperbolic. This wasn't D.C. having the Ashburn itis that everybody always talks about where we make our own players out to be better than they are. No. This is a real thing. Jaden Daniels, as a budding superstar, and this coaching staff led by a very popular players coach in backwards hat wearing Dan Quinn, they are a group that people want to be a part of. And Samuel, coming off of NFC championship game runs with a team that is as successful as any in the NFC over the last few years, singled out this place to try to go win. And that should be music to your ears as a Commanders fan. All right, speaking of music to your ears, the dulcet tones of Slows and Jagler. It is baseball season in D.C. Opening day is tomorrow. But we will open the baseball slate on The Fan next with our season preview for the rest of the show on Grant and Danny without Danny. Grant Paulson on The Fan.